The Cashflow Nation Podcast, Episode 2. Hello, and welcome to this episode of the Cashflow Nation Podcast. My name is Jason Reynolds, and this is the podcast dedicated to helping you take your real estate investing to the next level. Our goal is to help you grow your portfolio, analyze the data, and learn from the most successful investors in your community and around the world. Alrighty, everybody. This is Jason Reynolds, and welcome back to the Cashflow Nation Podcast, Episode 2. I am super excited about this podcast and our guest that we have today, so I want to jump right on in. We have Steve DeLeon with us. And he actually lives in Fort Worth and lived here for about 45 years and bought his first investment property in 1988 when he was 24 years old. Right now, he owns 9 investment properties. 3 of them are actually for flipping purposes and the other 6 are rental purposes. He's been flipping since 1988. And since then, he's actually flipped several hundred houses in Tarrant County. So that's awesome. And he now flips somewhere around 6 to 9 a year. So it just depends. His story about getting involved in real estate is really awesome. And I'm going to leave that up to the portion where we're talking with Steve. And then the areas he invests in is really Tarrant County, but he says he sometimes jumps into Johnson County. So Steve, he's on the phone right now. How are you doing, Steve?
Good. Thank you for having me.
Awesome. Yeah, you bet, Steve. Well, you know, I want to just start with first asking you, you know, your portfolio you currently have, you know, you said you have 6 that are for rental purposes and then 3 that are flipping. So can you maybe just give us a little history in terms of since 1988, how your portfolio has maybe grown and shrunk and how you got to where you're at today?
Sure, most definitely. Well, you know, since 1988, we've pretty much had different game plans as far as what we thought when we were at the time when we first started buying properties to today. So I think a lot of it, you kind of have to evolve as an investor with the times that are around you and in the marketplace and just the economy itself. So we've done, you know, we've bought properties. We've had, rentals, Section 8 type rentals. We've done owner finance as well. And we buy obviously properties to flip. And so I think, a lot of it has to do with the timing of different things. And so some of the properties we've kept and for a little while, then we would maybe resell them just to maybe buy a little bit better properties. And then the other thing was maybe we sold some because we thought, well, we see a more of an opportunity where we can buy a couple more higher end flips. And then we would buy those instead. So right now we have five rentals, but then one property is actually an owner finance that we're carrying the note on.
Okay.
And then we've got the 3 properties that we're doing in process of renovations for flipping purposes.
Okay. Great. What I'm really curious about is, it seems, for those that are listening, a lot of them are maybe new investors or experienced. But it looks like at some point you got the flipping bug, because that seems like it's your expertise. So do you remember the moment, when you were maybe, you got your first flip property and you just realized this is what I want to do? Because I know you own, some rental properties, but your forte is flipping. So when did you get that bug and why did you get it? What was it that you just loved about being able to flip properties?
Well, I would like to say that it was some magical thing that came out, but it actually started coming out of necessity. We in the early 90s we had accumulated several rental properties, and we kept finding more deals. The deals were easier to come then. You didn't have the competition that you have in today's market as far as other investors looking for properties. So it was one of those things where I could only hold so many rentals. So it turned into a thing. If I still wanted to be involved, we were going to have to fix these up and sell them.
Mm-hmm.
So it kind of evolved in that matter there. And then what took place from there is that we found that, after doing that for a while, we started buying a little bit more expensive properties to renovate and flip. And, where before back in the 90s, now I know the price difference is going to be not going to be the same as it is in today's market, but you know, we were buying properties that were retailing maybe for, you know, definitely under $100,000, mm-hmm. you know, the $70,000, $60,000 range, for example. And then where now, where most of the properties that we sell are in the high 200s, mid 300 range. Okay. So you can tell that we've kind of shifted from more of, you know, the lower price flips to more of the high, you know, higher end flips.
Okay. You know, we talked a little bit about, you know, just to give a little background to everybody that's listening in. I actually, I'm not sure, Steve, how did we become friends on Facebook? Do you know how? Did we just, one of us friend request another?
It could be. That's the great thing about social media is that you have that ability to see what other people are doing. And I think, you know, either, and I'll be honest with you, I don't know if I sent you a friend request or you sent me one, but we definitely started watching what we were doing. And it's always, you know, it's a great opportunity to network. And if I invite your audience, I mean, if they're interested in what we're doing, that they send me a friend request, and I'd be more than happy to accept it.
Yeah, no, and that's one thing, you know, as I was looking on Facebook, you know, I saw Steve doing a lot of great flips. You know, if you do have a chance, go to Facebook and friend request him and take a look at some of the work that he is doing. And I researched him a little bit and reached out, and we got coffee last week. And that's how this interview, you know, came to be. But another thing, just kind of backtracking a little bit, is, you know, a lot of folks don't know how to get started in real estate, you know, investing. They don't know if they want to flip or if they want to own rentals. You know, but one thing I really love is how random, you know, your story is on how you got involved in real estate. So, you know, can you maybe just give us a small snapshot, you know, what you told me about how you initially got, you know, into real estate and why you did that?
Sure. Well, you know, to make a long story short, basically, you know, I was going to school. I was 21 years old, and I wasn't really sure what I wanted to do. So, a lot of my friends were talking about when they graduated that we're going to go on to law school. And so, you know, you kind of do what your friends, you know, the group that you're hanging around with does. So I kind of thought in that mode as well, but, you know, I didn't, you know, the thought of having to sit in a courtroom or, you know, just pushing paper just didn't appeal to me at all. So I thought, well, what about being a real estate attorney? So I went and visited a title company. And there I basically met an investor. As I was waiting to be seen, I met an investor there, and we got to talking, and it was just one of those things where things kind of went really well. We kind of hit it off, and he invited me to give him a call, and you know, things didn't work out there with the title company. And so out of curiosity, I just gave him a call, and you know, kind of one thing led to another. I ended up landing a kind of like a paid internship with them for a couple of years, and just got the bug there of how the real estate market worked. And at the time, it was two partners, and they had just under 100 probably rental properties. And that's kind of what they did, is they pretty much just bought all type of rentals, multifamily. They would package them up and then sell them off to other investors as well across the United States.
Okay. Now I know you mentioned, you know, at some point, you know, you went off and you started doing your own work. And I love that moment you explained where you kind of realized, you know, hey, I pretty much know this. I think I can do it myself. So can you kind of describe that moment where you decided to, I guess, tap into your entrepreneur mindset and just, you know, run with it yourself? And then tell us about maybe that first transaction, you know, that we talked about,
sure.
Whether it was, you know, that, I think you said you assigned a contractor, I'm not sure, but, you know, what was your first, you know, deal when you went out on your own?
Sure. Basically, you know, working with that investment firm that I was working with, they, you know, I kind of moved up a little bit. I went from, you know, working with the leasing agents and kind of managing them, to overseeing a lot of the repairs, to helping them locate properties. So I did a lot during those 2.5 years that I was with them. So at the time, they were kind of getting bigger, and you know, one partner wanted to stay kind of small, the other one wanted to grow a little bit bigger. So obviously they were not, you know, seeing eye to eye there. Mm-hmm. So they split up, and each one of them wanted me to come to work for them. And I had just been recently remarried. I was 24 years old and had just gotten married and found out that my wife was, we were expecting our first child. And I just kind of, you know, we kind of just sat there and were thinking about this. And I thought to myself, you know, I think I can do this on my own, you know. So I basically informed both of the partners that I wasn't going to be joining either one of them and that I was going to go out there and do this on my own. And and obviously at 24 years old, you know, and being a newlywed and expecting a baby, I just didn't have a ton of cash. You know, it was like all the things were hitting me at one time, you know. So you're getting married, you're having a kid, and now you want to be self-employed. So it was one of those, you know, situations where I didn't really have a lot of money to, you know, go out there and put 20% down on a piece of property. So I started by basically wholesaling property. So the very first property I came across was one actually in Fort Worth, is in the south side of Fort Worth, and I had found an investor that was willing to purchase it. But the thing was, is that, like I said, I didn't have any money. And what I did, I didn't even have the money for the earnest money, to be honest with you. And so what I did was I talked to the title company and convinced them to hold my $500 earnest money check until until the property funded. And so she took a chance on me and kind of explained to me what was going to happen, basically, if we didn't follow through with, if I didn't follow through with the sale. And so, you know, God watching over me, he put everything in place and, we were able to sell the property, and I think I made, like, you know, at that time, this is, you know, 1988, so I made, you know, $5,000, which was, I mean, to me, was a lot of money, and, you know, back in 1988, that's, you know, that's still a lot of, you know, a lot of money today as well.
Yeah, yeah. So then if you have somebody who's 24 years old and comes to you and says, I'm too young to do this, do you laugh at them then?
Yeah, exactly. You know, it's, you know, it's a different time too.
Yeah.
You know, there's, you know, it's like, you can't really compare, that, you know, that age group of 24 year olds that were growing up back in the '80s to today.
Right.
It was a different time, but I will tell people that, you know, if they say, well, you know, you always hear the thing is it takes money to make money. And that's where I you know, kind of put my foot down. I'm like, no, it takes courage and passion to make money. You know, you don't have to have the money in your pocket to make money. If you believe in what you're doing, believe in yourself, then pull the trigger and just go for it. You know, the way I look at it.
You know, so, you know, say there's a new investor that's coming along and they're flipping properties and they, you know, they expect to make tons of money on their first flip.
Yeah.
You know, do you see that a lot? And, you know, what are your thoughts? You know, I know we talked about that some and that sometimes you got to learn the hard way. But, you know, for those that maybe have flipped and made zero or maybe didn't make much, you know, what do you recommend to them or the folks that expect to make a lot, you know, as they're getting started?
Well, you know, for the ones that that did well on their first flip and made money, I say, you know, get on your knees and thank God.
Yeah.
Because I promise you, you don't, because I promise you, you don't know what you did right.
Right.
You know, for the ones that have bought properties to flip and either they lost money, which there's several that have lost money or broken even. I say, you know, now you realize what you probably did wrong and just, you know, strap on your boots again and get up and go get the other one. Because the thing about this business is that there's no guarantees.
Right.
So because you lost money on your first one, doesn't mean you're going to lose money on the second one. Doesn't mean you're going to lose money on the third one.
Mm-hmm.
The same thing with when you make money. When you make money on your first one, there's no guarantee you can make money on your second one. So this business is very humbling.
Yeah.
And at the same time, you just have to have confidence in yourself and, you know, and to just go for it and just keep positive, keep your head up high and just learn from your mistakes. Because in reality, that's the only thing you're going to learn from is your mistakes.
Right.
There's nothing, there's not any books, there's not any seminars, there's not anything out there that are going to prepare you for the lessons that you're going to learn.
Yeah. And if you don't go out there and do anything, you're guaranteeing that you're not going to make any money. So.
Exactly. You have to pull the trigger in order to make, you know, to better your life and move forward. You know, you can't just stay stagnant and just keep reading books and keep buying tapes and keep going to seminars and all those types of things and wasting your money on a lot of that. And when it's a very simple process. I mean, it's you know, it can be confusing at times, and it can be, you know, a lot of people sometimes, you know, with a lot of the different regulations and rules and things like that. But bottom line is you know, it's the old theory of, you know, buy low and sell high. That's basically right.
Great. Well, you know, one thing I want to dive in a little bit more is some things that you're really knowledgeable about. And I really want to ask, you know, about financing. So over time, you know, I know, as you said, you jumped in, you didn't have any money. So you were trying to find, you know, ways you could leverage, you know, opportunities to be able to jump in and do what you were doing. But, you know, over time, have you, is your flipping properties or even your rental properties, do you tend to leverage your properties even when you're buying a flip property? Do you finance, or are you at a place now to where you, you know, typically will just pay cash for them since you've been in the business so long? You know, what does that look like for you?
Well, it just depends on where you are, as you know, with your portfolio, or if you're buying your first property and you're just trying to get started. Obviously, if you're just getting started, you know, if you don't have that rich uncle that's going to just, you know, open up his wallet for you, you're going to have to look at different things differently. Like for me, for example, you know, the wholesaling of the houses allowed me to generate some cash to where I had some savings. You know, where, you know, you'd make $5,000 here, maybe $3,000 there, another $5,000 there. And basically, I was able to kind of, you know, stash away a little, you know, a little money in order to get started. Because you're depending on what your goal is. I mean, is it to accumulate rental properties, or is it to flip, or is it to do a combination of things? And yes, to answer your question, at this point now, some of the properties we buy, we'll buy and we'll pay cash for. And, but there are some properties that just make more sense to finance out. And the only reason I say that now is because the, you know, money's cheap at this point in time.
Right.
So, you know, it's easy to, you know, so, me having, you know, $100,000 in the bank, for example, I'm not going to really make anything off of that. But if I put it in rental property, then the return's much greater. But at the same time, if I, you know, come across some other properties that, you know, I think this is going to be a great rental property, so I buy it, then I may end up financing part of it or some of it, just because I know that in the long term, the interest rate is really so low right now that it's not going to cost me, it's not going to hinder me from, you know, my overall goal of what I want to do. And I may end up coming back and just paying that off, you know, within 5 years or something.
Okay. So it's just a matter of the situation then for you, essentially.
Yeah. But, you know, for the most part, most lenders now, whether it's a bank or, you know, a private person, you know, private, if you go up to somebody that's just going to loan you some money, they're going to want you to have some skin in the game.
Of course.
So you're going to have, if it's something that you're going to buy and hold, or if it's something that you're going to end up flipping, you're going to have some cash, reserves to be able to either put as a down payment or apply towards repairs or whatever the case may be.
Okay. Great. Well, so the next part is really the systems aspect of it. You know, we talked about over time, you've learned a lot of things to look out for, you know, and it's not, you wish you could say you were never surprised anymore, but things do pop up. So can you kind of walk through what your process is? You know, say a property comes across your desk, or you get a call and somebody says, you know, I'm looking to sell this property. Will you come take a look at it? Can you kind of explain what your process is and how you do your own due diligence? Do you hire an inspector, or do you have your own contractor that you just run out there to look at the property? You know, what are things that are, you know, big issues that you try and look for, you know, that are deal breakers for you on certain properties?
Sure. The, I guess the biggest, you know, factor is location for me. It's not that I wouldn't buy, I only buy like in the best locations. And this is even looking at for rentals, or even looking at for properties we're going to flip, because that's really going to determine what I do with that property. So if it's a property that, for example, that I feel like, you know, it's just it doesn't have good bones. You know, you've got foundation problems, you've got, you know, bad roof, bad plumbing issues, or, you know, those types of things. You know, it might be something that I think, well, this would be a property where maybe we just buy it and then we just try to sell it the way it is to, you know, to somebody that's going to be a, you know, like a handyman type of investor or something like that. Mm-hmm. But if it's for a property that has good bones and I feel like, you know, this would make a great long-term rental, then, you know, we basically, you know, when we write up our contracts, for the most part, I buy them really with no option period.
Okay.
Only because, you know, I've been doing this for quite a while, so it's easy for me to walk into a property and kind of know what to look for as far as, you know, the overall bones of the property. And, you know, when you've done this, you know, several hundred times, you know what paint's going to cost you. You know what flooring's going to cost you. You know what a roof's going to cost you already, and those types of things. But for those that are starting, they're just doing, you know, buying their first property, I would probably recommend that if they didn't spend the money for an inspection, that they at least get themselves an option period, you know, for 3 days, 5 days, or whatever, however many days they need, so that they can get their contractors or, you know, their subs to go through there and give them some real bids. Mm-hmm. On what it would cost to do the renovations that they're wanting to do. That way, going into it, they know what the budget's gonna be for those renovations.
So how important, you know, when we talked, you said that, you know, an investor may do a flip, and then they may cookie cutter those costs to their next flip.
Sure.
Right. And so you mentioned that's a mistake.
That's a mistake. Yeah. Just because you spent, you know, say $30,000 on a renovation for one property, don't go buy the next property thinking you're only going to spend $30,000. And I think that's the mistake a lot of second, third time flippers is that they think that they're buying, it's only going to cost them the same exact amount. Because once you start opening up some walls and you're wanting to reposition the kitchen and you're wanting to make a bathroom a little bit bigger, or you're doing, you know, some different things, once you start getting into the walls, you don't know what you're going to find. Mm-hmm. You know, so there's been, you know, many times where I feel like we've done the exact same thing to one property and we get away out of it for $40,000 or $45,000, and I feel like I've done the same thing to the other property, to another property, and for some reason it cost us, you know, $50,000 to $55,000. Mm-hmm. You know, dollars.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, the thing is, you have to be careful with those things. So I always go in with, you know, thinking I'm going to spend this amount of dollars, but then I also have a contingency fund that is usually about 10% of what the budget is, just in case I run over that. Now, if it's a property where we're going to do a little bit more, like more of an addition to the property, or we're going to have to revamp an entire kitchen, then I might go do a little bit more of a contingency from the overall budget on those properties, because you will come across some things to where, you know, you might run across to where, you know, the previous homeowner or even the one even before them, you know, had some wiring done by, you know, some brother-in-law, and you've got junction boxes everywhere in the house, which is a danger. And the next thing you know, you're having to rewire the entire house.
Yeah. Okay. So, you know, what would you recommend to, you know, somebody that's maybe just jumping into flipping or getting started? Because I assume now you've been in so long, you have contractors you trust, you probably have your own crew that you run most of the time, you have a set crew that does everything. You know, for the new investor that's maybe looking to just start, how do you recommend they start looking for subs and, you know, finding who's going to be the best one and evaluating costs? Is there a strategy to that?
I think, you know, if you're just getting started and say you don't really know of a good sub, and I think, and this is a recommendation that I've actually made to several people that I've known that they've wanted to start flipping properties, and they're like, well, I don't know who can do this or who can do that. And basically what I tell them to do is, look, you know, if you're wanting to flip properties in a certain neighborhood, drive those neighborhoods, look for signs, look for people that are, you know, houses that are like under renovation now. And, you know, if you feel like, you know, an investor may have bought that property, or maybe you've been watching a property that sold and you feel like that was a property an investor would buy, go buy there and talk to the maybe introduce yourself and talk to that investor or talk to the subs that are there and just ask them if they're open or if they're available to make, you know, would they be interested in making offer, giving bids on some work if you have a property that comes up. The good thing about being able to identify people like that is that, one, you get to watch the progress of the work.
Right.
And I've done that before. If I'm looking for a specially skilled tradesman, like a carpenter, you know, for example, that, you know, we're wanting to do some, you know, nice mill work on a piece of property on the flips, I'll kind of drive around a little bit and take a look and see who else has kind of been doing some of that work. And talk to them and say, hey, you know, I've got a property in, you know, five blocks over. I'm interested in doing this. Would you be interested in giving me a bid? And a lot of times we get found some really good contractors that way. And the great thing about it is that I get to see their work go through the whole process on somebody else's dime. So if I go into the property and I think, oh man, this sheetrocker really messed up these walls or whatever, then the thing is, it didn't happen to me on my house.
Right.
You know, it happened to somebody else on another house. And I know, okay, well, I need to mark, you know, X his name because I'm not going to use him.
Yeah, you.
But if you run across somebody that you're looking at, okay, well, hey, you know, this painter was here, started on, you know, Wednesday, and man, by Monday he's already done and did a great job. But then that's somebody, you know, you might want to call. And it's very simple. I mean, I've had other investors come onto my properties and they ask me, hey, who does your cabinet work, or who does this, or who does that or whatever. And most investors will share that information. You know, now if it's an investor that has his own crew and he's paying everybody by the hour or whatever, and he keeps them pretty busy, he may not share that information.
Mm-hmm.
But if it's somebody that you know, just uses them job for job, like a plumber or electrician or something like that, to where you don't really employ those people, that, you know, they've got their own company's work or their own setup. But most of the time, you know, people will share information with other investors.
Okay, awesome. Well, I think that's all great advice, and I cannot believe it, but time has flown, and I still have so many questions I'd love to ask. But, you know, we do want to keep this podcast down to, you know, our time frame that we have. So, Steve, real quick, could you maybe share how people can maybe get connected with you, maybe through Facebook or, you know, email, or are there other venues that people can maybe learn more about what you do? And tell us maybe ways we can help you too. You know, I know sometimes you're looking for properties, or all the time. So, you know, what are ways that we can help you as well?
Well, I guess, first of all, I mean, you can send me a friend request on Facebook. At, you know, it's Steve DeLeon, and that's S-T-E-V-E, and then D-E-L-E-O-N. Also, we have a Facebook page for MCM Buys Houses, and my email address is steve@mcmbuyshouses.com. And if they want to send me a text or even give me a call, they can reach me at 817-798-3268. And I think, you know, for like any other investor right now, we're all looking for properties. We're looking for off-market type deals. So if there's some investors out there that come across a property and, you know, they're not ready to pull that trigger on purchasing it themselves for whatever reason, and they want to, you know, sell it to me or see if there's an opportunity for us to work something together, I'm willing to look at something like that. So we're always looking for property. So we're always looking for deals in Tarrant County, and we'll pretty much look at anything.
Okay. Awesome. Well, Steve, thank you so much for meeting with us today for this podcast. I know you had just tons of knowledge, and I think it was great. So we really appreciate you taking the time to take a little bit of time to visit with us.
Yeah, you're very welcome, and it's been my pleasure.
All right, everybody. Well, it's time to wrap up today's episode of the Cashflow Nation podcast. Could you do us a quick favor before you go? It will only take about 30 seconds. Head over to iTunes and rate this podcast. This will give us valuable feedback of what content is helpful for you, and it also helps improve our rankings that will make this podcast more visible so other people can find it. Thanks so much for helping us out. If you would like to learn more about investing in real estate, please be sure to check us out at cashflowdfw.com. Again, that's cashflowdfw.com.